Okay. I'm Noah.
I'm Eddie.
And today we are carrying on
with the Indiana Jones.
We're going to Indiana Jones and Temple of Doom, 1984. Directed Steven Spielberg back, and Harrison Ford is back.
Did he do the whole series, including
James Mangold of Ford versus Ferrari.
A
complete unknown.
And a complete unknown. He just has this weird thing where Johnny Cash is in almost all his movies for no reason.
But a very talented director who just didn't make a good Indiana Jones movie. But we'll get to that whenever we get to that movie.
Can I just quickly say, a little bit of Spielberg's track record with second movies to amazing movies.
Yeah, there's a reason he just stopped after World.
He just gets so bored of them. He's like, I've had enough of this. I'll make a second one. And then he's just like, nah, I'm okay.
But like, while Jurassic Park 2 was a boring, not very good...
It's enjoyable. Yes.
It's this movie... Okay. What is your history with Temple of Doom before we jump into this movie?
I got the box set for my 11th or 12th birthday.
Yeah.
It was really cool. It's a big Blu-ray box with all the DVDs in. Obviously, I watched the first one. I was like, wow, this is awesome. Indy's so cool. And I may or may not have liked... Yeah, Indiana Jones, great movie. Then I got to Temple of Doom. I was really confused. I was like, interesting, to say the least. I didn't know I could watch live open heart surgery on screen. But, you know,
bad for the whole family. Cool.
And then, I watched it proof when I was like 12. And then the third one is like infinitely better than this one, in my opinion. I think it's my favorite.
I got the box set when I was 14, and it was the kind of thing probably the best find I've ever found. Like, I went to a thrift shop.
Yes.
They've got
good films.
I know. And it wasn't even the kind of thing where I found one. No, it was this box set that was made just before Crystal Skull, where they had all these cool bonus features. Do you know how much I had to pay for it?
£2.
I paid somewhere between 10 and 30 pence.
That's insane.
Because like, it's the kind of thing where like, it was this shop where like, it was like 10 pence per movie. Either the whole thing was 10 pence or I had to pay like 10 pence per one. I don't know. But 30, at most, it was 30 pence. Best buy.
That's so good.
I know.
Charity shops. Guys, if you can't find a DVD on anything you stream, go to the charity shop.
I had to do that for Catch Me If You Can, actually.
It's genuinely like £1 for a bit. I found The Shining. For like 50p.
That is just
amazing. You will find great stuff in the same shops.
I am just the last person.
Different shops, but same price.
I feel like I'm one of the last people of our generation who still buy DVDs.
Yeah, so do I. I collect them and I'm like.
Because Netflix just isn't trustworthy
DVDs
enough.
And CDs.
You know? Yeah.
Someday when the power goes out, everyone's going to be like, oh, I can't watch my movies.
I can.
And I can listen to my music. So how do you like that? Yeah.
So, but actually before that, this was after, because I said the first Indiana Jones movie I ever saw was Dial of Destiny.
Which was awful.
They took us to the theater to go see that.
I mean,
and everybody came out of that saying, what was that? That was pretty bad. I was like, hey, hold on, guys. That wasn't that bad.
It was terrible.
And after that, I was like, okay, what is the thing that people don't like about this movie?
You know my problem with the fourth one?
What?
It feels like the Rise of Gru, the Minions movie, the second one, that's set in the 70s. It feels like that, but with
an old
person.
It's that kind of thing. Yeah. But
like, it's got all the same people. It's got the like cool 70s blaxploitation character with the afro who's like an FBI agent.
It's actually the fifth one.
Yeah, the fourth one is equally bad. They should quit while they were ahead.
Hot take. I saw Rise of Gru in the theaters because of course
I did.
Not
that bad.
Of course. It's not that bad, guys.
My Baby Shut Me Down turned up on the soundtrack. I was like...
It's not the worst
Nancy
thing in the
Sinatra,
world.
You know, I'll work on it.
But I don't know. Maybe we'll go through the whole Despicable Me movie someday.
They really picked the wrong movie to make a like franchise.
Yeah.
It's the same year they released... I don't know. They released something and it nearly won an Oscar and they chose Despicable Me of all films.
I don't
films.
Know which one.
That's like unbelievable.
But it was the kind of thing where like, okay, after Dial of Destiny, I was like, I was going to watch the original trilogy and see what I think. So I first watched Raiders and I was like, oh my God, this is such a good movie. Wow. Okay, what's next? Temple of Doom. And I hadn't heard of any of the discourse before Temple of Doom. So I turn it on. And with me with this movie... I was at this really weird age when I was 13. So I was at the age where I was too young to get terrified by this movie, but not old enough to be like, this movie is just what I'm able to critique what works and what doesn't. So I'm just sitting there and I'm like, what am I watching? There were bits that genuinely shocked me because I didn't expect that to come out in this, in a movie like this. And I'll get into the reasons why, but this movie was just like, oh my God, I had yet to seen a movie go this hard before.
So,
what do you think of this movie?
I think there's a couple of, like, it's very enjoyable to watch, obviously, because it's kind of, to me, it feels like a comedy, but I don't know. It's I find it weird that it's a prequel for the second movie.
Yeah.
They just randomly picked a prequel.
Yeah.
And especially that they're, like, purposely trying to avoid the Nazis when in every single Indiana Jones movie made, they continue to put the Nazis in.
Apart from Crystal Skull.
Including one set in the 70s.
Not including Crystal Skull. But they say it with me, Crystal Skull does not exist.
It's awful. It's terrible.
I'm just playing.
Temple of Doom, it's, you know, it's fun. I think it's a bit weird and melodramatic.
This just might be the most insane movie, one of the most insane movies I have ever seen. This just might be the craziest movie Spielberg has ever made. It's definitely one of the most controversial. He's made controversial movies in the past, like AI or like Ready Player One, stuff like that.
I mean, I'm not that shocked. It's the guy who made a monkey do the Nazi salute. I'm not.
Yeah,
that
but
surprised.
This is just such. This like, is a movie that fundamentally
that guy.
And it's weird. Okay, let's get into why this movie is like this. So, 1981, Spielberg makes Raiders of the Lost Ark. It's really one of the most successful movies of all time at that point. It brings back all of the goodwill that he might have lost after making 1941, you know, and it's just like this massive phenomena. And when he made that deal with George Lucas to make this movie, he also made a deal with him to make two others as well. And that also went into contractual agreements with Paramount. Now, so when they started making this movie, this is after, so Spielberg is kind of on top of the world at this point. Because after Raiders of the Lost Ark, he makes this little indie movie called E.T.
You might have heard of it, maybe. You might have heard of it.
I don't know. It kind of looks like a rip-off of Mac and Me, but let's not get into that.
It's just Mac and Me, but, you know, with Skittles.
Because Mac and Me is a cinematic classic.
Because, I mean, if you haven't heard of Mac and Me...
Yeah, what are you
what
doing?
What are you doing, man?
But, like, yeah, after...
Don't watch that.
After that, he... It's a kind of thing where, like, he goes back to make this movie. But the thing is with this movie, they are writing and making this movie. George Lucas and Steven Spielberg are making this movie in a really bad place in their lives, because George Lucas is going through a really, really ugly divorce at this point. And he is not in the very good mental state where it's like, I want to make like a happy movie or something like that. Also, Steven Spielberg just has broken up with his kind of on and off again girlfriend.
So this is like a moon-shaped pool scenario.
Yeah, this is two people, very moody, angsty people making a very moody, angsty movie.
This is their
movie.
Attempt for an angsty movie.
This is, and also this is at the time where a lot of Spielberg's critics are like, oh, this guy, oh, he only makes the commercial movies. He only makes the family movies. And, you know, the critiques that he's not like, that he destroyed the new Hollywood era, which I don't think he did. I think that goes, it's because of movies like New York, New York, and you know, other stuff like that, that kind of collapsed.
Can we briefly get out of the way? I don't think Spielberg has ever been to India. I'm just...
yeah.
I'm just going to put that out there. This was diabolical. Like, it was actually so... And, okay, I found it so amazing how naive he can be about...
Yeah.
Like...
But he didn't write this movie. We have to get that out of the way. He didn't write it. It was written by Willard Hayek and Gloria Katz. And these were people who apparently were really interested in Indian culture.
Clearly not. They just like cult movies.
That is a very... odd because it
where
doesn't
did you
feel
get
like that.
The Indian culture includes ripping people's hearts
yeah,
out.
Yeah, let's get this out of the way. This movie's racist. It's pretty blatantly
pretty racist.
Racist. Even people who defend this movie know
even,
that this is a racist
even
movie.
Not just the India scenes. The scene in China when he's like being poisoned, that
yeah.
that felt like a caricature. I was
yeah.
like,
yeah.
I don't know.
But with this movie,
bit borderline.
We've got that out of the way. I don't really want to get into that because it's pretty blatant and it's not something we have to really get into. Okay, let's start with what works about this movie because a lot of stuff does work.
Ki-hae Kwan.
Ki-hae
that's
Kwan.
How you pronounce it. It's
okay.
He's great.
Yeah.
And I mean, carrying on from the Goonies. Or was
actually,
it
no,
that,
before.
That after? Before the
this
Goonies.
Is before, 1 year before the Goonies.
He did a great job for a child actor. Mm-hmm. And considering he's got quite a strong role, you know,
yeah,
escape scene, like he did really well.
He does great, and
second,
it's quite funny because like before the audition, he was originally taking his brother to the audition for this movie,
yeah,
and he had never heard of what an Indiana Jones is, so like it was this kind of thing where like oh it's just completely based on talent this, and as for Spielberg like this so basically if you look at the chronological like timeline of Spielberg's movies this. Is a movie that comes after E.T. but before two movies, The Color Purple and Empire of the Sun. And those were two movies that were trying to break away from I'm Spielberg, I'm the Peter Pan of movies, I make all these really, I make all of these, you know, really, you know, fun family movies and he's trying to do something a bit more serious. You can look at this movie and go, this is Spielberg trying to make something more serious.
You could also say, what the hell is this, Spielberg?
Another thing,
answer yourself.
Another thing is that Spielberg, this is also 1 year after Twilight Zone, the movie. So if you don't know what happened at the production of that, I suggest you go look that up.
Was that Spielberg?
He was one of the directors.
Twilight Zone
I don't really want to get in. I don't really want to get into everything that happened in that movie because that could take another podcast. But safe to say, Spielberg was not in a very good headspace after the production of...
And it shows.
Yeah. Because nobody was in a very good headspace during
this
movie.
What was this? That being said, Indy with the moustache.
Oh my God.
That was cool.
I don't think Harrison Ford has looked... has looked that good like since this movie.
That was so cool.
That ripped short.
Harrison Ford does a great job as... Indiana Jones.
As always.
You know, yeah. If you're the guy who survived the burning of multiple franchises, you've got to be a pretty good actor. And
this is...
He's good. The love interest, kind of...
Okay, let's get into everybody's favourite character, Willie Scott.
She doesn't really do anything. She's a bit like,
my
in my opinion, she's a bit like Shelley Duvall in The Shining, where she kind of just hangs around and is like...
Yeah, but Shelley Duvall has a reason for screaming her head off all the time.
No,
because Jack Nicholson is trying to kill her.
Yeah, but like... But like,
this
if you read the book, she's a cool character, isn't this? She's just like screaming and like flailing an axe around like it's a like
I
party
I have been thinking,
throw.
And what I feel with this movie, Willie Scott is similar to like... You know the episode of The Simpsons, Homer's Enemy?
Maybe.
Where it's like Frank Grimes and it's like... in that episode, the writer said that when they were making that episode, it was like, we're creating a character who does not want to be in the world of The Simpsons. This is a character who does not like the world of The Simpsons and is constantly trying to get out. That is how I feel about Willie Scott. Willie Scott is a character who fundamentally does not want to be in the movie of Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. It's constantly screaming her head off. Like, and this isn't even like a hate against Kate Capshaw or anything. She seems like a wonderful woman. I find it so cute that like Steven Spielberg and Kate Capshaw ended up getting married like in 1991. They've been together ever since. That's nice. I like that that one good thing came out from this movie.
Yeah.
But good God, is she annoying. But what The Simpsons got right is that they kill off Frank Grimes at the end of that episode. In this movie, Willie Scott is there for like the entire like 2 hours. And you just have this person who is like, I don't want to be in the world. It's like, stop Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. I want to get off. It's just...
I think the problem with this film, and one of the only things I think kind of works for it, but also doesn't work for it, is I feel like all the horrible atrocities of like, the absolute sexism that is the female love interest, the absolute rape, like all of that stuff, it kind of excuses itself because it feels like a movie set in the 1920s, made in the 1920s.
And that's what they were going for. So we kind of...
It does mean there are some pretty inexcusable, horrible,
but
like not great parts to it. But it feels like a movie you know, that was made for the time it's set in, not the time it came out.
We talked about in Raiders that Steven Spielberg originally, before he wanted to do, before he got Indiana Jones, he wanted to make a James Bond movie, but the people who were making James Bond movie at the time, I don't know if this has changed, I'd have to check, but it's the kind of thing where only British directors could direct a James Bond movie.
I think it's British
movie.
Or Scottish.
I think
same
you might
for
be
that's... actors and largely musicians.
Yeah, too. I feel.
Is that correct? The musicians have to be because Radiohead nearly did one.
Is that right?
Jack White did one, and Alicia Keys. So.
Alicia Keys.
Yeah, for Quantum of Solace.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah, but it's that kind of thing. We're like, oh, it's
so
only
that was a
British.
Massive miss, Radiohead not getting the one. Have you heard Spectre?
Yeah.
So much better than Writing on the Wall. Also, Writing on the Wall isn't even like the name of the film. Like, every other single one, all of them, up to, like, that, up to Spectre, are called the movie.
Serious.
And then Sam, you know, Sam Smith, in his usual, like, being Sam Smith, goes, actually, I want to be different, I'm just going to call it Writing on the Wall. And it's just so, like, I don't like it, personally.
But it's the kind
Spectre.
Of thing, but like, oh, yeah, everybody has to be British, so he couldn't do that. But in this movie, so let's talk about the opening. One, I love the
that
opening.
That is really Bond.
I love the opening. Like, I love the opening Anything Goes number, mostly because like I love like musicals like that that are just big chorus lines with just
yeah. It feels like
you know, and like you, and then he comes out with a tuxedo and everything, and
it's Bond.
It's Bond
from Connery time.
Yes,
and also that whole thing as you were saying with the music montage. Yeah. It feels quite a lot like that scene in The Godfather when they're at the Copacabana in the second one and they're all like watching it and it's their first time in Nevada or something. It feels kind of
which
like
is quite
that.
Interesting because Jesus,
I don't think
what
it's
did Francis Ford
I don't know which one it was, but the one in Nevada and they're all like dancing and it's cool, glitzy glamour and it's a cool way to
what
open
did Francis Coppola direct after The Godfather Part 2? Oh my god. Because
nothing good.
No, wait. He directed Apocalypse Now, but then he directed One from the Heart, which
also,
is this...
The making of Apocalypse Now was awful.
I don't want to get into that.
That was awful.
But he made One from...
I feel so bad for Marlon Brando. He signed up because he was like, yeah, the last one we made was amazing, and then,
He was probably the person making the shoot a bit more difficult than it had to be.
Yeah, but like, they were filming in actual Vietnam during army hours. Like...
That's crazy, actually.
Yeah, it was like...
Have you ever read the book?
No,
book.
I should read it.
Yeah. But he made One from the Heart, like, after... which is this big musical romantic, which is similar, like, it's similar to that kind of thing, and...
I think that's the start of the end.
Yeah.
No, because when did he make Outsiders and Rumblefish?
80s.
That was good.
And can I just say something? I kind of respect, like, Francis Ford Coppola, because after directing The Godfather and Godfather Part 2, you might think, yeah, I'm going to create...
Yeah, like, where'd you go?
I'm just gonna keep making movies like that. No, he made, like, Peggy Sue Got Married, Jack, and he is still constantly going on about Megalopolis. Bless your heart, man.
Megalopolis
it's not a good
awful.
Movie. It's give it up.
Just give it up, man. Do you see his letterboxed? It was like... I made this film and I think I did a good job and gave it 5 stars. And then on the other side, it's like, Megalopolis is awful.
Bless your heart, man.
One and a half stars.
It's good to be passionate about stuff, but you gotta know when you didn't do a great job.
I think he watched Gladiator and he was like, this is
sick. You know, he's been making that thing since the 80s? Like,
you can tell.
It's really
kind
of sad.
And awful.
Yeah. But like...
But, you know, you gotta give him his dues.
Yeah.
He's, you know, he made 3 great movies.
Yeah, so... That's more than I've made.
And The Outsiders. 5, 6.
Yeah, that's more than I've made.
More than I made. I mean, he made Megalopolis, so that kind of takes one off, so it's 5. But, you know, like...
Yeah.
Minus 1 point there.
Looking at the beginning of Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, it's kind of crazy to think that it took Spielberg, like, nearly 40 years to make an actual musical.
Like, yeah, I mean...
Like, this is a guy who can clearly direct a very good musical, and it took him, like, till 2021 to make West Side
Story. I think
this
is a bit of a shtick around people who make musicals.
Yeah, and at this time...
Especially at the time.
At the time, Martin Scorsese makes New York, New York, bombs. Francis Ford Coppola makes One from the Heart, bombs. 2 movies that have been credited to ending the new Hollywood era. So I don't think it would have been kind of a feasible thing doing
plus,
at this
musicals,
time.
Just in general, once you've made a musical, it's quite hard to like get out of it if you make a good one. Like, if you look at the directors who make good musicals, that's kind of all they do.
Yeah. But, like, yeah.
You can't really go back to it, because everyone... Like, James Gunn, he put cool music in one film, and he can never escape that now. forever and ever, he's going to have to put cool music in every single film.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. I kind of respect Francis for, like, constantly doing different kind of movies.
Yeah, because at least he's not, you know, typecast.
Yeah, he's not. He's not. He does.
He could have easily become Martin Scorsese, and I'm sorry to say it, but he is just mafia movies or New York movies.
Yeah, I know. And
that is...
Silence, Hugo?
Well, obviously, there are, like, exceptions.
Oh, Hugo, that's a good one.
There are exceptions, but largely what he makes is just gangster movies or movies in New York.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay, sure. Maybe four of them are not, and then everything else is Heat...
Is that not Scorsese?
Who is that?
That's Michael Mann.
I was thinking because there's the two guys and they're all buddies, but like Goodfellas, The Departed. He did Once Upon a Time in New York, did he not?
Aviator.
Yeah, all right, but what's he known for?
Yeah,
gangster movies.
Yeah, so
because he's part of the little troop of like you know all of the like I mean it's probably gonna come out wrong, but all of the guys who worked on The Godfather. Like
yeah, it's that kind of 70s. Again, that's what I'm talking. That's what I'm talking about. This kind of like
Italian American
new Hollywood movie brats. Kind of like I'm gonna make a gritty movie about realistic.
But
stuff
I think
in
the
New
thing
York.
About that, and it kind of in some way relates to Indiana Jones, where you had these actors who stuck together. You had these Italian American actors who made like The Godfather and stuff, and you know you had the like macho Americans like you know Harrison Ford and all those guys who stuck together and made movies. And now, if
yeah,
you
but
were
that,
to,
was, that originally wasn't the
if you
intention,
try to like if you, you know. Try to remake any of these movies, you wouldn't have enough of one style of actor to make it. Like The Godfather, you don't have enough Italian actors to make that anymore. Or like if you tried to remake this, you probably could, but you know the original Indiana Jones movie, you don't have enough like American. Well,
apparently, there was some news going around during the summer that Pedro Pascal was apparently going to be cast. Disney is apparently rebooting Indiana Jones.
Don't do that.
Don't
That's
do
an
that.
Awful choice.
Please,
That's
let
like,
it die.
Have you seen someone someone's trying to remake Memento?
Ew.
No one can ever do that.
No, because it's just ew, because it came out, what, 25 years ago?
No, but who are you going to get to play Guy Pearce? Like, bro.
Yeah, but...
not possible. Plus, you would not get away with that anymore. Like, it's just watching a murder backwards, and somehow it was like, sounds cool.
I just find the existence of this movie so weird. It's a movie that none of the three movies I think have ever brought up as existence. None of the characters.
No, that's where it being a prequel is a bit saving grace because they can be like, I think what they did is they made this movie, and they were like, cool, we'll make it a prequel, and then maybe we'll make a series.
Why is this movie a prequel?
They made. I don't know if it was intended.
I heard that it was that okay. Okay, it's the kind of thing where Steven Spielberg and George Lucas are like, okay, we don't want to do Nazis again. That's boring. Okay,
so, yes,
let's do something different. And it was also the kind of thing where George Lucas was like, okay, I have this kind of philosophy when I make sequels. He didn't direct, but he was
producing and almost directing part of it.
Yeah, and he produced.
He's executive director basically.
It was basically so Empire Strikes Back comes out in 1980. The sequel to the biggest movie of all time, Star Wars. And it's the kind of thing where George Lucas was like, okay, the sequel has to be darker, it has to be grittier, it has to be a bit more somber than the original. Which makes sense for The Empire Strikes Back. Yeah, Empire Strikes Back came out, it got mixed reviews. People were like, wait, why is this thing dark? Why is it so much darker?
But
it makes sense when you're doing a sequel. This is a prequel to Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yeah, and I think the thing with this, I think I can see another universe where it was originally intended to be Indy's adventures through time and it doesn't matter when it was made.
Yeah.
And there probably would have been a lot of prequels of him in the 20s doing, you know, Bond-esque stuff.
Yeah, and the trunk,
But then this movie comes out and it bombs.
Well, it doesn't bomb, but we'll get into everything.
But it was not,
here.
Like, great, basically. And I think they were like, oops, so let's just go back to what we were doing because Nazis and
success. It was a kind of thing where like, okay, it makes sense when you're doing a sequel to make it darker and gritty and stuff.
Yeah, because it's...
When
you know,
you're doing a prequel to Raiders of the Lost Ark, why are you making it grittier? It's the one before that. Raiders of the Lost Ark should... It's like...
Raiders should
and
be the
grittier. And this isn't a movie that's just fundamentally not interested in telling the story of like, oh, how Indiana Jones became Indiana Jones. It's not... This is not a Casino Royale. This isn't Casino Royale, where this is how James Bond became 007. No, this isn't going how Indiana Jones became Indiana Jones. It's just like, oh, this is the movie that happened before Raiders of the Lost Ark. Here you go. Enjoy. And it's like, I don't really know what it wants to be. It's not really a prequel. It's not a sequel. It's a very confused little movie.
It's quite a bit like, they give it to us and it's, what do you want me to do with this? Like, thanks, but
with that said,
it doesn't really add anything.
And it's so weird. Like, I'm always a fan of sequels that just are like, that bite the hand of the people who want it. Like Batman Returns or Gremlins 2.
And Pivot.
That are like, ha, you really like the first movie, don't you? Well, we don't care. We're going to make something so different, so weird, that is just going to alienate everybody that likes it. And it's like, and those, it really works for those movies. But for this movie, it's just like, I don't know, everything, the original movies weren't perfect. Batman 89 isn't a perfect movie. Gremlins isn't a perfect movie. Raiders of the Lost Ark is so close to being a perfect movie. I'm like, I just find the style of adventure in Raiders of the Lost Ark more interesting. This adventure is not that interesting. Okay, you have the bit in Shanghai, then they just kind of wander around for a bit. You have the unfunny racist dinner scene.
Yeah, so they basically just go like, here's one semi-racist Chinese bit, then we're just going to introduce two cool characters that randomly Indy escapes with for no particular reason, other than, you know, we had to get them in somehow. And then they just put him in a plane. And then they just decide that the plane belonged to the guy trying to kill him.
Okay, but that was, again, that visual comedy of Indy going, like, nice try, Lao She. Closes the door. The plane says, Lao She on it.
Yeah, but then he survives.
Can I say something?
He survives a 60-foot drop with an inflatable raft. Yeah,
can I say something? Everybody's always like, ooh, I hate the French scene from Crystal Skull. It's the dumbest thing in the world. Indiana Jones would never survive a nuclear blast by saving in a sitting in a fridge. Okay, but you have in this movie where Indiana Jones jumps out of an airplane on a raft
it's
and survives.
It's very, very Point Break, where it's like,
how
he
you
jumps
cannot
out of a plane.
You cannot complain about the fridge if you don't complain about the raft. The raft is dumber than the fridge.
Also, that's
come on.
In Point Break, it makes no sense because he skydived once before and suddenly he can catch up with someone without a parachute.
Oh my, it's just like.
It's a raft. It's not even a raft with a like inflated bottom.
Yeah,
it's just got like a piece of top as a bottom.
And it's like, yeah, that makes sense. And it's like, no. As if you hate the raft and you hate the fridge, that makes sense. But you can't you can't hate the fridge, but like the raft.
And then there's this weird thing where they're like just kind of on a boat for a bit, just like sailing through the snow. And then somehow that ends up becoming India.
I think they were in Nepal.
I don't care how that works. They just. Down a river and they travel 100 kilometers like out of the blue without food, you know, just because he's Indy. And then he arrives and the Indian people like kind of know who he is. Yeah. They're like, let's get this guy to save our rocks.
Indy just wanders into this adventure. And then it's like, after all of that, the unfunny Willy antics and the racist and funny dinner scene and the kind of like general disappointment that stems from not being a very interesting movie. We are sent into a descent into hell itself when we get to the ritual scene. I think this was the bit where I was like, good God.
It's awful, but it's also like, what I don't understand
is. It's so captivating because this is just what was going through their minds when they were thinking
Who
this.
Goes from, so divorce, let's just make like, a movie just about.
Then we see the ritual.
Whatever comes to.
See the ritual where a guy has his heart. It's not even like they cut away. No. They go in, take out his heart, which are really cool practical effects, I must say. Like, go in, come out, go, Kalima! And that's not even the worst bit. Then the guy is sent into a pit of lava set on fire. The lava comes out, splurges. You just see Willie Scott losing her mind. Not to mention the bit before that where Short Round and Indy are in a spy pig and nearly die. Oh my God. I don't know. Something about that is that you kind of got to respect a movie. In this world where we have so many sequels that just either do the same thing as the original or just aren't interesting, it is kind of cool to see this movie take this U-turn and just go like, are we going to do something completely
but you
different?
Go from like, here's a, you know, indie but Bond, which is kind of different. And then they're just like, so you thought we were doing indie but Bond, but actually we're just going to do indie, but it's Doom the video game. And you're just going to like...
That's a good way of putting it.
You're just going to watch indie run around a bunch of stupid traps like it's Moon Knight. And then magically get like telepathied into trying to kill his own teammates. And then some 4 foot tall kid manages to like have the courage to burn like Voodoo Indie on fire. And
Voodoo Indie, where it's like he turns evil, he hits Short Round. My God.
Like, who does that, first of all?
Like,
then Short Round.
He has no soul.
Short Round, who just got like absolutely slapped across the face, decides, you know what's a great idea? I'm just going to light Indy on fire.
They light him on fire. But
and then Indy's like, what have I done?
But that scene after where he's like, I'm okay, kid. I'm okay. That is nice. I love Short Round. I love Indy. Everybody thought that Kugei Kwan was going to be in Dial of Destiny after he won the Oscar, but
nope.
I guess it was the Dial of Destiny.
Let's bring back the Nazis instead. That's fine.
No, I think it was because Dial of Destiny was too far into production.
No moon landing cool indie and the moon landing movie. No, we get senile indie walking around with a bunch
of
Nazis.
James Bond already did the moon landing.
Who have not forgot him. Just going to say that now. For some reason. And time travel. To meet Archimedes. Who was never brought up in any Jurassic, like any Indiana Jones movie ever before.
Yeah. But I just.
We could have had Sean Connery come back and be like.
He did.
Oh dear.
Yeah, by 2020.
Whoops.
But it's the kind of thing I just. Okay. CGI. What I really like about this movie, I respect it for just.
Doing it.
Going all out and just making one of the most insane movies. This just feels like two. It's incredible to see two of the biggest people in Hollywood making one of the most weirdest and just like just this is just a movie that's so anti everything Raiders of the Lost Ark. Marion not here, you know. Sala not here, you know. Nazis,
thank
not
God
here.
Sala not being here, by the way, because that was a bit.
Well, Sala's in Dallas, that's the name.
Yeah, but it's
anybody.
A bit.
Yeah, I know it's a bit.
Thanks, guys.
But I'm surprised nobody took it
again.
With that.
Not surprised it was, you know, the racism in this movie is you know not.
You probably didn't need that. But
not that different.
It's the kind of thing where like, oh, we had a strong female lead in Raiders of the Lost Ark. Well, we're not having that here. We're having a damsel in distress. We're doing something so different. And as a movie, you kind of got to respect that.
I feel like the subtitle of this film should just be Indy has a bad drug trip. Because that is essentially what happens. I reckon some point along the way, he accidentally takes some like special Indian leaves that he's never had before. And then, you know... He wanders around, floating, watches guy get his heart taken out without, you know.
Yeah, but I don't know. Like,
Indian the Bad Drug Trip, I think, is a great name for it. With his, you know, improbable 4 foot tall sidekick managing to break steel chains with a hammer.
Yeah, but, okay. I guess we're going to talk about everything that happened after this movie came out, because it is very important to know why they never returned to something like this. So when this movie came out, it got...
Minecart chase quickly.
Oh, Jesus, I nearly forgot the minecart. It's so cool, guys. Please, I have not been to Disneyland or Walt Disney World, but I beg, tell me there's a minecart.
This film, for me, is like Amazing Spider-Man 2. It's a very, very weird sequel to what worked, where there's glimpses of amazing action for both the characters, where, you know, this is what Indiana, or this is what Spider-Man should be. But unfortunately, the rest of the movie is just so unforgivably awful.
It's a messy movie that doesn't entirely know what it wants.
You kind of just have to like forget about it. Unfortunately, like, as much as it could have been amazing, they just kind of were like, "Nah."
Yeah.
But have fun with this, you know, voodoo priest called a really racist name.
What was it? Oh my god.
He's like.
Oh my god! No, I can't forget his name. Man. Oh,
Mona Ram.
He's my favorite.
He sounds like a tooth doctor. Like, it's
shut
just,
up.
And then him killing like 60% of them just with one cut.
Oh my god! But that scene on the bridge where he's like, "Prepare to meet Carly in hell." That's a cold line. Because like anytime I watch that scene on the bridge, it's like, okay, but how is he gonna get out of this? He has thuggies on both sides.
I don't understand how we cut it, but he survives and everyone else doesn't.
Yeah, but that's
the power of plot armor.
Well,
But okay, when this movie came out, it got mixed reviews. Because again, it's kind of the thing where I was like, what the heck are you doing?
I think even if this wasn't a sequel, it would still be, what the hell are you doing? Like, yeah. What is this?
This is the a guy really made it was E.T. a weird departure. Now, we kind of have to go back to what happened with Batman Returns, where we watched that video about those kids complaining about...
Yeah, the violence.
But this is what happened with Batman Returns, but kind of dialed up to 11. Because, good God, people were not having it with this movie. There were...
I wouldn't either.
There were night...
If I'm a 13-year-old who, you know, watched Indiana Jones with my dad when it came out, and I came and sat down to watch this, and I watch a guy getting essentially like open heart surgery and like lobotomized,
and it wouldn't even,
and then burned to death, I wouldn't exactly
would not
be
such
like
a bad thing.
Go indie.
If it was just Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom that came out this year, that year, 1984, that was like, oh, it's pushing the PG. Fine. But
it doesn't push the PG. It shoots at the gun and it's like
PG,
ignore you.
Because PG, it was very different. PG, the rating system is very different than what we have today.
Yeah.
Because
Grease is
today
PG.
You could like have Sing 2 getting like a PG or thematic for like strong themes or like Frozen having a PG for like a foot size joke. Or
but
something
then
like
some
that.
Of it is like. Grease was like a U or a PG, and it's like they have a fully blown like condom joke make out suggested sex scene, and they're like 8-year-olds.
Yeah, Raiden's got a PG, and it was that kind of thing. The only movies that got used back then were just like Disney movies. And
what do you have to be to get an 18 in like 1980?
Well,
what
okay, as far as I remember, it was Universal for All. PG, which really did mean parental guidance. Like, you can't take your kid to this movie on their own. Then you had...
12. PG-13.
12? And then, okay, with this movie, you had... When this movie came out, it got a PG. And there was obviously outrage, because, good God, look at the movie. And it would have been... I think it wouldn't have been such a big talking point if Gremlins hadn't come out 2 months before. And that, along with that movie... was really pushing the PG as well. Yeah. Like, good God, that was pushing the PG. And these were two movies done by Amblin, this by Spielberg's.
But then with Gremlins, I feel like it has, while it pushes the PG, it feels like a PG movie. Like, it feels like a kid's movie. There's a good resolution. You know, there's all of these, like, goofy villain characters.
Yeah,
although it's pushing
which Gremlins is a movie we're going to get to.
Although it's pushing it is a kid's movie in that sense.
No, but like the amount of violence and like, there's a reason why I was so confused as a kid when I was like, oh, Gremlins, isn't that a kid's movie? I check, it's a 15. And that's why and that's why I always put it off watching it until I was 13, where I was like, I didn't think it was the right age for me to watch it. And I probably could have watched it when I was 11.
It's really not that bad. It's violent, but you know, you've got 12-year-olds now who watch like...
Yeah, exactly. But back then, it was the kind of thing where like, oh, there you've got Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom and Gremlins. These are two movies that are really pushing it. We cannot be showing these movies to children. These are not children's movies. We have to make the PG-13. And the PG-13 was like, okay, parental guidance meant you had to take like your kids along with you. PG-13 was like, okay, anybody under the age of 13, you can't see this. If you take your kid under the age of 13 to this movie, it's your fault. It's not our fault.
Yeah, it's like in the UK now, if you go to watch a 15 film, they ID check you because you have to legally be 15 to watch the film.
But it's just the PG.
Which I find a bit ridiculous. Yeah, PG, like 12 in England, PG-13. You could take a 6-year-old to that if the parent turned up and they would not care.
But that's 12A, I guess.
No, that's 12. There's no age restriction on watching a 12. You have to be above 12 to watch it alone, but your parent could take a 4-year-old to watch it.
I just find like the rating system, it's just like such an interesting thing in terms of how much it's changed. Because seeing how a movie like... I even think Poltergeist got like a PG, but when it came out in 1982.
Poltergeist?
I think it did. Yes, it did.
That's crazy.
When today it would have gone at like an 18 or something like that.
That's like a fully blown horror.
Or hell, like if you look at movies like early Disney movies, like Pinocchio, which you look at that and those got used, but if I think those, but I think if those movies got made today, they'd get a PG or even a PG-13.
PG.
Yeah. Because like
Pinocchio, Pinocchio could get a 12, yes, nowadays because of the smoking.
The smoking and the children turning into donkeys.
Have you seen the thing where like people say that Donkey from Shrek is a Pinocchio character?
Okay, can we just talk about that? It's not, because there's a line in that movie that says I was born outside. And it's like, yes, he was a donkey.
No, okay, but he says like it took me a while to learn to not like hee-haw. Which is exactly what happens in the Pinocchio movies.
No, but he says he was born outside.
And the fact he can talk, which none of the other animals can.
Puss in Boots can talk.
Yeah, but Puss in Boots is Puss in Boots. Like, Puss in Boots is so amazing.
The wolf. No, but
Puss in Boots is so, like, incredibly macho.
And Pinocchio does exist in the Shrek universe, so he probably wouldn't know.
I don't know.
But yeah,
he doesn't recognize him in the Pinocchio movie, because when he becomes Donkey. I don't know.
But like with this, so back when the Indiana Jones series was just a trilogy, this was seen as the obvious black sheep of the family, even to Spielberg. When he was promoting Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade in 1989.
Which is a great movie, by the way.
Yeah, and he was like, okay, Indiana Jones was too dark, too subterranean, too bleak. It outpolted Poltergeist. There's the one out of my own personal feeling in that movie. And George Lucas chopped down like the dark tone to like the divorce he was going through at that time. But I don't think the dark tone is the problem with the movie. I really like the dark tone of this movie.
I think the dark tone is good. What I think the problem is, it's just silly. I feel like there's not enough.
There's not enough in the film. I find it hilarious that this and Gremlins literally invented the PG-13 because they were just too dark.
I don't know. I feel like it's a film that wants to do a really big cult thing. There's just not enough to back it up.
There's a lot of things they want
to
do.
To me, it feels silly because it's not realistic, the cult at all.
It's not realistic.
Fine.
Yeah.
But they don't back it up with anything.
It wants to be a lot of things. It wants to be James Bond.
It's this weird, really weird kind of random explosion of just cult that hasn't been backed up.
The dark tone isn't the problem.
And it also switches themes, setting, vibe.
It wants to be a James Bond movie. It wants to be an Indiana Jones movie. It wants to be like. And like a movie that celebrates Indian culture, it still wants to be a Republic serial. It wants to be a lot. And I think the problem with this movie, it lacks it. The dark tone isn't the problem. It lacks heart. It lacks quite literally. It lacks momentum. It lacks any actual feeling.
The pacing's a problem.
It lacks proper pacing.
It's so slow to start. And then by the end, you're like learning it's five
breakneck,
new things a minute.
It's this breakneck pace. It just...
Which usually isn't a problem.
The Indiana Jones series are big blockbusters, but they're not big, dumb blockbusters. They're not like a Transformers.
Not all of them.
They're pulpy and kind of silly.
4 and 5.
They're pulpy and kind of silly, like the serials they were based on.
But they're not stupid.
This movie is veering a bit too close to being big, dumb blockbusters.
At the time, when it was a trilogy, sure, this was only a bit dumb. Yeah. But...
In an age where we have Crystal Skull and Dial of Destiny.
No, but 4 and 5 is awful.
Yeah.
You can't just take Shia LaBeouf and be like, yeah, he's the next indie. Then you're making Indiana Jones.
Should have made Short Round the next indie, but that's a story for another day.
They should have at least had another indie. Bro, number 5 felt like elder abuse. I was just saying that and poor old... You know, I know he wanted to do it, but Joe Biden wanted to be president. Like, I just feel like there's a point where it's the same thing I feel about the Simpsons voice actors.
You can
have
a
cameo, like.
It's the same thing I feel about the Simpsons voice actors. Just please,
like Joe DiMaggio, give the guy a break. He's changing his vocal cords every 5 minutes. Yeah. Like, poor guy.
But I just feel that it's veering too close to being
in the
80s.
Drugs were a magical thing. Movies and like. TV would not be the same without it. Like, The Simpsons would not exist.
This is just a reflection.
This wouldn't exist.
But Temple of Doom really is a reflection of what you could have got away with in the 80s.
But you can't tell me that Temple of Doom was done sober. There has to be something.
But we've got the reasons why it was like what it is. And I'm not...
They say that.
Sure, I don't like it as much as the style of adventure they had in Raiders. But I am happy that this movie exists. Just to kind of show you can put Indiana Jones in any situation.
And he still holds up.
You know, it's it's an interesting experiment. And for that, I like Temple of Doom to exist. But let's have a short round movie now. Or we could just let the franchise die. Let's let the franchise die.
It shot itself with a short gouge shotgun. Like, the final one, the fourth one was bad. That was a bad start. And we thought we let it die. But no, they came back for a fifth one because they had enough of, basically, they had enough of waiting for the slow death.
Yeah.
So they were just like, James Mangold, can you just like kill us off, please? Mm-hmm. And so they made him make the most atrocious.
Well, we'll have to see if they actually killed it off.
They better. Soon. But I swear, if they pull out another one, I've had enough of it.
But join us in like, I don't even know, next time I want to do this Indiana Jones movie.
The third one, I'm looking forward to.
When we get to Last Crusade.
River Phoenix, Monty Python. Like, it's fun. It's interesting.
Yeah. So,
and explaining Harrison Ford's scar in a cool, creative story.
Yeah. That movie explains Indiana Jones' backstory better than this movie ever did.
And Sean Connery is amazing.
From our situation has not improved.
Being Bond, it's the most Bond movie.
So many Bond comparisons.
It's such a good Bond parody.
Yeah.
That scene where he uses his whip to, like, basically Spider-Man his way out of a jail cell. But so cool.
Yeah, we'll get to
that.
Last Crusade.
But, yeah, what are we ranking this? What are we rating? Scores on the doors.
I gave it on Letterboxd 8 out of 10, only because there's so many really, really good stuff, but there's also... This movie, there's a real lot of really, really amazing stuff and a lot of really, really bad stuff where it levels out to make a movie that is pretty good. Not amazing, but it's pretty good. I like it. I know. It's just, I don't see movies like this being made and it's cool. It's a cool remnant of a different time, you know? I don't like it as much as other movies that do the similar thing like Gremlins 2 or Bad Gremlins Returns, but as it is, it's a fun watch. You know, sometimes I just want a fun watch. And this movie delivers it most of the time. Not all the time, but most of the time. Well, I give it a 7 out of 10.
I'm going to give it 2 stars out of 5.
2 stars? Oh, jeez.
It's, to me, it's good, but it's a stinking pile of just, like, when awful and racism. Yeah. I just can't
When it's a prequel, when it's a follow-up to my favorite movie of all time, I was expecting a little
favorite
bit
favorite movie of all time?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Oh, I could watch Raiders until the sun blows up.
That's kind of crazy.
So,
yeah.
Where are you meeting in the middle?
So you said...
6. Let's go 6.
3 stars?
6 is crazy. 6.
That's 3 stars.
I think we gave that to Ready Player One as well, so like...
That is insane to put this on the same level as an okay film.
It is an okay...
This starts okay, and then they light the trash on fire.
No, it starts really good. It starts really good, dips, when it goes to the Thuggy Death Cold, brings back up, and kind of stays there.
Who the hell named it Thuggy? That's such an awful name.
Do you want to do your research? Because, oh, yeah, that's a real thing.
It's a real thing, Thuggy Death Cold.
It's a
real thing.
You've got, okay, homework. Research about Thuggy Death Cults and the Twilight Zone, the movie. Thank you, bye.